Good afternoon, everybody. Brian Newber here from goldenblack.com with my co-pilot, Tom Beanhart. It's just us this week, so we're going to try to not fly the plane into the side of the mountain here on our goldenblack.com Saturday simulcast. Alan is unavoidably detained. So This is the equivalent of the scene in Caddyshack where they let the caddies into the pool. So it's just me and Tom. It's brought to you by our friends at the Parisian Club Hotel and the 811 restaurant. We thank them for their support as always. Tom and I will now discuss Purdue basketball and Purdue football here for the next however long this takes us. Just to start off with basketball, obviously last night Purdue gets a kind of a foregone conclusion of a win over Nebraska, 92-65 in Mackey Arena. Obviously, it is what it is with Nebraska basketball, as it always is. But I thought Purdue took a really, really distinct step forward defensively. I thought some really positive indicators came out of this in terms of Jaden Ivey's individual defense, Zach Edey's individual authoritativeness in the post to start the game. Both of those things have been kind of uneven all season long and have been some things that, you know, to be quite honest with you, have held Purdue back a little bit. Improvement in both regards have dovetailed perfectly with the Wisconsin game, so that certainly suggests some sort of turning point perhaps having occurred after that disappointing loss to Wisconsin. But we shall see now, because obviously Purdue has a couple of really important road games coming up. So we will see what's sustainable. But at Penn State and against Nebraska, Purdue took a very distinct step forward here. So that's what I got right off the bat there.
Yeah, you know, Brian, I guess you talked about some of the areas you were, I guess, enlightened by or thought Purdue improved at. I mean, I guess just going forward, if you had to make a to-do list for Purdue of maybe the top one, two, or three things, you still think really need to get buttoned down here as we really dig into the heart of this Big Ten season beginning Monday with that afternoon tilt over in Champaign, Illinois, followed by a trip to Bloomington, Indiana on Thursday? What would those one, two, or three things be that you're still really looking for this team to tighten up and get better at?
Well, they're all areas that Purdue's trending well in the last two games. The two things I mentioned earlier, I think they've been very good defensively, or I shouldn't, you know, perhaps very good defensively is a bit of an overstatement. I think they've been trending well defensively. They've played together better than they have before. They've been more concentrated. I don't know if that's the right word, but they've just been a different defensive team since the end of that Wisconsin game. I always thought the two guys who could really lead change there were Jaden Ivey and Travion Williams. And I think that what you've seen from Jaden Ivey, who admitted in the postgame press conference last night that he probably has been focused too much on offense and is sort of making that concerted effort now to be that two-way player that, you know, Purdue since long before this season even started, they were hoping he would become. That's a very, very positive sign. You know, Purdue's got to start games better. I think if Zach Edey starts games the way he's played the last two in the beginnings, I think that goes a long way to taking care of that issue, because, you know, Purdue, unlike a lot of teams in the country, Purdue starts the games lie in an outsized way in the hands of the center, because they're going inside. That's their first kind of temperature check on a game. That sort of dictates, you know, the conditions on the ground for the rest of the game. And if Zach Edey is playing physical and tough and productive and efficient, which he didn't always do, you know, around the very start of the Big Ten season, Purdue's going to be much better off for it. Purdue's far from a finished product from a defensive perspective. They can still keep getting better there. I think it would be nice for them to get in a little bit more of a rhythm at the foul line. I know that's not really something that that's something that naturally kind of comes and goes at times. It's not like anyone's trying to miss free throws, but I think Purdue's been a little up and down at the foul line here the last couple of games. I think Purdue's going to be fine shooting the basketball. Other than that, I think they're in a pretty decent spot. I think they're going to Illinois with a little bit of positive momentum, but this is going to be their most difficult game, obviously, since Wisconsin. And being on the road, I think we can say it's even more difficult than Wisconsin.
Well, what are you expecting here, Brian? Three of the next four games are on the road. I talked about, of course, the Indiana game on the heels of the trip to Champaign. Purdue comes home to host a bad Northwestern team, but then goes right back on the road and plays at Iowa. We all know every game is important, but I guess coming out of this four-game stretch coming up, What in your eyes would be a good end result for Purdue?
Well, you know, Purdue's still one of the best teams in the country. I know people don't necessarily view them that way. Purdue people tend to not view them that way. National people do. Because Purdue lost two early road games, people have obviously soured on Purdue a little bit locally, I think. But Purdue's still one of the best teams in the country. So when you're one of the best teams in the country, I think you can credibly expect to have a lot of success. I mean, I don't see any reason why they can't win at Illinois, personally. I know Illinois is having a great year. I know Illinois is the one team in the league that, you know, can really, really take away your strength because of Kofi Coburn. But I think if Purdue is disciplined on defense the way they have been, if they take care of the basketball, if they do the things they've been doing since the end of the Wisconsin game, I don't see any reason why they can't win that game. I think Indiana obviously has had its ups and downs. That's always a tough place to win.
Yeah.
But Purdue should be super confident that it can win in Bloomington because it does it every year, or it's been doing it every year. That's not going to last forever, but I think Purdue's the markedly better team between the two of them this year. I think them having just won a road game at Penn State, I think obviously puts a little bit of wind behind their sails. Who comes after that? I can't remember.
Yeah, you got Northwestern at home on the 23rd, yeah. And they go to Iowa. And then actually, Brian, they finish up January with the home game against a very good Ohio State team. So this is going to be maybe it's not too big of a statement, a potentially season-defining, stretched in this month at Illinois, at Indiana, Northwestern at home, at Iowa, Ohio State at home. You get a shot at some pretty good Big Ten teams here, especially a couple of them on the road.
Yeah, there's not a game left on the schedule that I don't think Purdue can't win. I'm not saying they're going to win every game from here on out, but I don't think there's a game on the schedule that you can't win. I think this game Monday is probably or very likely could be your toughest game the rest of the season, on paper anyway. And I think Purdue is going into it with a little bit of positive momentum here. If he can get this one, I think that I would feel really good about the Indiana game. If I were a Purdue fan, I would obviously feel really good about Northwestern. I'd feel really good about Ohio State. I don't know how good Ohio State is. Mm. I know they had a great start to the year, but I think that there's some limitations there around EJ Liddell that I think, I don't know if they're going to be able to match Purdue's weaponry from an offensive perspective. I just think Purdue set up pretty well here. I do think that Wisconsin game could have been one of those, sort of lessons, sort of those things that humble you and kind of refocus you. And, I think that Rutgers game, it's kind of interesting how things play out because, in my opinion, if Purdue goes to Rutgers with a number 7 next to its name instead of a number 1 next to its name, that's a game Purdue escapes. I think that if Purdue plays against Wisconsin the way Purdue has played the last two games, and I know Penn State and Nebraska aren't as good as Wisconsin, but I think that if Purdue just plays Wisconsin the way they've played these last two games, I think that's a game you win maybe by double figures, to be honest with you. So if it took that Wisconsin loss to get some of this stuff straightened out for Purdue, it will end up having been worth it. Obviously time will tell. There's a lot of season left. I think that Purdue still has a chance to be very much in the Big Ten championship hunt. I'll continue to say that I think this Purdue team, more than any others, can be a better NCAA tournament team than a Big Ten team because of their multitude of weapons and their multitude of matchup problems. But again, long way to go. But I do think there are some indicators here that Wisconsin game could have been, in the long run, something that's going to yield some pretty positive dividends.
Yeah, something like that will obviously sharpen your focus and really get the attention of the players and I'm sure help the coaches get their message across moving forward here. So like you said, Brian, losses like that early in the year, while they are disappointing, they certainly can be beneficial on many different levels, as you talked about. And Purdue lost a game this last week, the trip to Ann Arbor for COVID issues within the Wolverine program. Is there any word on maybe when that game could get slipped back into schedule?
Nothing really beyond that it will. the Big Ten is and Purdue alike are certain that game will be played. I think there's a plan in place. I think I have some knowledge of when that game will be, but to be honest with you, I've forgotten. I don't retain information very well. So it is going to be, there are going to be some games moving around most likely.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible someone is going to get, you know, the short end of the stick from a scheduling perspective in terms of a short turnaround, in terms of a less than ideal travel situation, something like that, but they are going to get the game in. I think that, to be honest with you, I think that postponement was a big advantage for Michigan because Michigan has as much talent as anybody in the league. They just can't get their act together. They haven't been nearly as good as they were supposed to be coming into the season. I think the more you kick tougher games down the road, the more opportunity it gives you to kind of get your act together here. So I think that bought Michigan some time to figure some things out, which I think can be an advantage for Michigan. That being said, the extra days of practice might have helped Purdue too. Yeah. It's not often you get blocks of practice time in the middle of the Big Ten season in order to focus on yourself as opposed to just opponents. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, when that game is played and what these teams look like when it actually is played. But obviously the most important thing is that, you know, for the integrity of the Big Ten season, the integrity of the Big Ten championship, they get a full schedule in this year, which obviously they couldn't do last year.
And in your mind, Illinois is the team everybody's chasing right now, right?
Well, they haven't gotten beat yet. So them and Wisconsin both are having, I still think, again, perhaps I just have to get over the fact that, you know, sometimes Wisconsin's better than I give them credit for, but I do just think they're kind of finding a way here again, more so than they're actually a really good team. Now, I said that a couple of years ago when they won the Big Ten too. So, you know, at some point you are what your record says you are. So I think I probably have to start giving Wisconsin credit for some things here. That being said, this Wisconsin team has higher end talent than a lot of other Wisconsin teams. So maybe I ought to just keep my mouth shut about Wisconsin. But right now, as long as Wisconsin keeps finding ways to win, and as long as Illinois, you know, keeps winning, and I didn't see much of the Michigan game last night. It looked to me like Michigan might have been shorthanded. I don't remember seeing Hunter Dickinson out there. Did he play?
I didn't watch it last night.
Well, as long as those two teams keep winning, I wouldn't sleep on Michigan State either. You know, Michigan State's. I thought they were gonna feel their youth this year, but they haven't all that much. They've been a better team than I anticipated them being, a more consistent team. Gabe Brown has really taken a step as a player. Mm-hmm. They've got improved guard play this year, and they're having a really good year. So I think right now you're looking at Michigan State, Illinois, Wisconsin, Purdue as those top four. I think Ohio State has some limitations that I mentioned before, but there's nobody in this league Purdue can't beat. I don't think. I think, you know, Purdue might still be the best team in the Big Ten. Purdue might still be the best team in the country for all we know. I know, again, the opinion outside of Purdue is higher than it is around Purdue for whatever reason. But I think that the thing for Purdue, and for whatever reason, the last couple of weeks have become a referendum on like Purdue getting scoring from its point guard position. So that's as red a herring as I think I've heard, because people are focused on how many points Purdue's fifth option is scoring when the other team's first option is getting 30 when you're struggling. That's Purdue's issue. Purdue has got to get better defensively. They've done that the last two games. They've got to keep getting better defensively. They've got to become a more complete basketball team. If they do that, I think the sky is still the limit for what they can do this season. Defense is the single most important element to Purdue's success here the rest of the way. And with that being said, hey, Tom, it's our annual rite of January. Purdue is trying to hire a defensive coordinator. How about that segue right there? My God, that was brilliant. Purdue's looking for a defensive coordinator again, huh? I can rule myself out as a candidate. I think I can rule you as a candidate. What else we got here?
Yeah, you're right. It's almost become, like you said, an annual rite. This would be, what, 4 years? Four different play callers. Going from Nick Holt to Bob Diaco to Brad Lambert, now to Mr. X, right? And from what I'm able to gather, Brian, it's going to be a methodical search. It's going to be a thorough search. There's recruiting going on right now. This is an open period. The staff people have probably seen on social media, been out visiting schools and whatnot. So that's going on. But again, I think Jeff Brohm obviously knows what he wants to do schematically, right? I think he laid that template last year after the Bob Diaco fiasco. Wants this defense to look a lot like his offense from an aggression standpoint, being very attacking, if you will, picking their spots, but certainly not being passive and read and react. So that's not going to change. It's about finding somebody to come in here and push the buttons on this defense and to keep it rolling as well as it was last year, right? I mean, I think we've talked about this before. I think you and Alan would agree. I think the listeners would agree that that defense from game one to game 13, I know they had their hiccups, but still, by and large, that was a steady force and a steady presence all year and played a lot better than I think anybody anticipated. When you look at the numbers, they had some nice personnel come in the program to help them from the portal standpoint. But there's no doubt about it, right? Right, Brian, from Mark Hagan, to Brad Lambert, to Ron Inglis, to James Adams. I mean, four new coaches. How was all this going to come together? And it came together, I think, like I said, better than anybody could have anticipated. Now, you know, what direction will Jeff Brohm go here? There's a lot of different directions. I'm aware of a couple people I think I've been spoken to. But, you know, Brian, the play caller could already be on staff. It could be Ron Inglis.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one of the two guys, more so than Mark Hagan. I think we all agree would be the guy. If he were to stay in-house with this thing, Ron Inglis, who has called defenses before at places like Michigan and San Jose State in particular, and who has been a head coach at Eastern Michigan, I think he's a guy equipped to do that at a high level. He's 53 years old. And so, again, it could be a guy on staff, and maybe Brohm has to go hire just a linebackers coach. And, of course, as we've written and talked about in recent weeks too, this staff on defense could have another opening with James Adams. Speculation seeming to point toward him leaving for Wake Forest for a similar role with the Demon Deacons. And of course, following Brad Lambert, Adams is a Wake Forest grad. He was a linebacker there, coached with Brad Lambert. Brad was the head coach at Charlotte. And so again, Brohm could have another opening to deal with. So we'll see what direction, you know, Purdue and Jeff Brohm go film this. But again, Lambert, James Adams, possibly, and also, Brian, I'd love your thoughts on the departure of Jamarcus Shepherd, an original member of Jeff Brohm's staff in 2017, a guy who we all know brings a lot of juice to the practice field and the sideline. Of course, as you know, too, covering recruiting, played a big role in bringing some nice talent to West Lafayette, too.
Yeah, I think Jamarcus Shepherd was a loss. I think he was a big part of Purdue's kind of the face of Purdue on the recruiting scene. Obviously he helped coach some really good players at Purdue. That being said, Purdue's offense is as wide receiver friendly as you can get. And I think that that was a big part of Purdue's recruiting pull as well. I think that was a big part of the productivity you've seen at that wide receiver position. I think you should have a good deal of interest for this position. And I think that whoever that is, will be helped in recruiting by the nature of Purdue's offense and all that stuff. I think it's really important Purdue get a personality again. I think personality is really important, not only in recruiting in general, but recruiting wide receivers, because they tend to be more gregarious, confident types of people. But yeah. I think that Purdue should be able to get a good qualified guy here who'd be set up for success with some decent talent in the program, provided a lot of that talent can stay healthy. You know, a lot of the good young receivers Purdue has in the program right now have a nasty habit of getting hurt, unfortunately for them. But I think that I think Purdue should be able to go out and get a pretty good wide receivers coach who would come in here and be pretty set up for success here. Now, just to kind of follow up on the whole, you know, staff topic we're talking about here. Obviously, this is a program run by the Brohms. It will always be a program run by the Brohms as long as the Brohms are here. But there has been a lot of, and obviously assistant coaches are going to come and go, especially in situations like that. But do you get the sense that he views the constant change and the lack of continuity as an issue that he's concerned about? Or is this just something where he's okay just going out and getting different guys every year and figuring it out on the fly?
Ryan, I think he's content figuring out on the fly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to devalue anybody's contributions, but I think, you know, the administration of this staff feels they can go out and find good assistant coaches. And you hate to lose anybody. You always like to have continuity in whatever you're doing right. In life, whatever your business is. continuity certainly is a desired commodity. But, you know, if there's one thing we know the staff has had since 2017, it's a pretty steady churn of assistant coaches, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. And I guess they proved it last year, right, Brian? I mean, four new assistants on that side of the ball, and they hit the ground running. And we're no worse for the wear. So I think they feel they can find people. They value the assistants they have, and they certainly don't want them to leave. But if it does happen, I think, like I said, they feel confident that they can replace those people. And you know, just back to Shepherd real quick. I think you'd agree he brought in the two best wide receivers in school history, Rondale Moore and David Bell. And like you said, his impact was far reaching.
Right.
Valued member, and he brought that energy to the practice field too. You know, I think you have to have these coaches all play certain roles, and not everybody can be a calm, cool character. You got to have some guys that have fire and brimstone, and that was something Jamarcus brought. During sometimes you could have those lulls in practices, and it's a long season.
Yeah,
he's always brought the energy and the juice, and my goodness, you know, again, I think whoever you bring in has got to bring some of that, because most of the other personalities on that offensive staff don't have quite that dynamic personality
right.
that Marcus had. Few people do. So, again, that was a loss. And also, didn't mean to skip over, Brian, the retirement of Neil Callaway was another semi-big news item from this last week, too. Assistant offensive line coach. Came to Purdue prior to 2020 as an offensive analyst, an off-the-field role. Of course, he was promoted last year to that full-time spot, and by all reports, did a good job. And now he's gone, 66 years old. From what I understand, wants to spend more time with his family. Obviously, he's getting older. Could possibly, Brian, fill a role as a consultant, sort of what Tony Levine did, coming back just maybe for a week or so to talk about, you know, offer his input on the position. And that's all up in the air, though, at this point.
Right.
So, again, Purdue's in the market there. But, again, now, Brian, I think I wrote about this. You may have had it boiling over, too. But the replacement for Callaway could be one of three things. It could be another assistant offensive line coach, which is what his title was. It could be assistant offensive line / tight ends, because Purdue did not have a full-time tight ends coach last year. Or it could be a tight ends coach. If you were to ask me, I think it's going to be probably an assistant offensive line coach. I just think from what I gathered too, Jeff Brohm really liked having two offensive line coaches out there.
Right. Just to go back to Shepherd real quick, what I meant by when I think he was a big part of the face of Purdue, I think that energy, that personality was a big part of kind of what set Purdue apart in recruiting. I think at Purdue, you always have to have a guy who just grabs your attention. You know, mm-hmm. and I think he was kind of that guy for Purdue, but
in-state guy too, a four-way guy.
In-state guy too, yeah. But especially at your marquee position like wide receiver, so I think it's really important that Purdue gets some personalities here. I think that offensive line position, whatever form it takes, too, could stand to have a guy with, you know, some charisma, some pull to him from a recruiting perspective. That is a position where they've been wanting to up the level of talent they've been able to bring in. On the front end. So it'll be, you know, a few really important hires for Jeff Brohm, who's had a pretty stable offensive staff over the years too.
Really
so, now it is his offense. That much is undisputed. So, but the assistant coaches do matter. The stability does matter, but it is Jeff Brohm's offense. Now that Jeff Brohm offense will be playing a schedule next year that just changed. I am the king of transitions today. That was great,
man.
Just smooth, man.
Yeah, Merv Griffin.
Like melted butter. the schedule was altered this week. And to be honest with you, I'm not even sure I looked at it yet. And I did look at it, but like I didn't discern what the immediate differences were because I'm in basketball mode currently.
I got you.
Can you tell us what matters here, and does it in any way change your thoughts on how things might play out for Purdue next season?
Again, this was anticipated response to the 2020 pandemic Big Ten only schedule. Brian, as you and viewers probably remember, the Big Ten altered its schedule that year to a 9-game.
There was a pandemic? What?
A 9-game Big Ten only schedule. And in doing so, they messed up the, the home road sequence in some of these series. And for Purdue, what got messed up was the Nebraska-Wisconsin home road rotation. 2019-2020, Nebraska came to West Lafayette 2 years in a row. And Wisconsin came to West Purdue. Was going to Wisconsin in 2020, but that got caught up by COVID. And they went there in 2019. So those venues got altered. Those were the biggest things, Brian, we all anticipated. So Nebraska's coming to West Lafayette and Purdue's going to Wisconsin. And there were four other games that just had their dates altered. The first month of the season remained unchanged. Penn State's still the opener. And the non-conference remained unfettered, too. The last two games of the year remained the same, too, Northwestern and Indiana. So, again, like you said, most people have gotten a look at the schedule, and it does seem very user-friendly, if you will. and then my 3-2-1 I wrote yesterday, this is pretty ambitious, but if you look at the first seven games, Ryan, it's not crazy to think Purdue could be 7-0. How's that for pressure? 7-0 going to 7-0 going to Madison, Wisconsin. I know
I almost fell out of my chair when I saw that. That's a bold statement.
It is, but you know they got to go the game. It's who knows with Penn State the opener at home. I mean, I never want to overlook Penn State, but Brian, that game could be a pick'em.
Yeah,
maybe Purdue's given one, and then they go to Syracuse. I mean, that may be a pick'em or Purdue's given a point or two, and then you got Indiana State and FAU. Then you open. You open in Minnesota, and that could be obviously a conundrum for the October schedule. Then you go to Maryland. So again, that's a big jump, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. It's not like they're going to USC and Alabama and Auburn. But anyway, it's fun to kind of look and speculate. But yeah, the schedule again, the tweaks, just the big ones with the Nebraska and Wisconsin venues changed, and dates on four others were altered as well. But again, overall. A very apparently advantageous schedule, you would think. Going to be a fun opener, Brian. September 3rd at home, Penn State. Penn State team coming off two sort of so-so seasons. A game, Brian, that could maybe, I'm told, be moved to Thursday. We're a long way from that decision being made. Probably not Friday, but maybe Thursday, September 1st. Wow. That would be a little fun, too. There's that. That would happen this last week, too. Brian, I wanted to ask you, too, about recruiting for football. A few years ago, January, February, this was it, right, man? Guys were taking visits. Crazy things were going on. Of course, the early signing period sort of washed all that away. But as you've written about, Purdue still has some lines in the water, if you will, trying to get that big nose tackle from the College Station, Texas area. Talk about Connor Lindgren. I think he was visiting this weekend as we speak. Think about that, Brian. He's probably walking around the Union right now.
He is. The Union's pretty torn up. By the way, it's going to look really nice, so even more reason to check out the Purdue Union Club Hotel.
Yeah, another
five-star transition right there, Dean Hart.
So there's that. And also, I talked a little bit, I think you had him boiling over, about the portal too, buddy. Still looking for a running back.
Yeah,
we know that. Still would like to get an offensive lineman. We know that. But the vibes I'm getting aren't the greatest right now, but they're still going to look. The portal is always open, right? Purdue could add a guy in August. So there's always guys hopping in. We know there's an offer out, the running back from Minnesota, the running back from Stanford. There's a couple offensive linemen they wanted, Brian. I think the East Tennessee State kid and the kid from Cornell. They're not getting those guys. That's something for everybody to keep on the radar until the second signing period for high school kids. And again, the portal, Brian, the portal stops for nobody, buddy. Always going to be something to write about and talk about.
It's you choose the form of the destructor, and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man shows up. That's I don't know what that means, but that's the portal nowadays. It's this ominous thing, just stepping on churches in New York City. And it's the conditions on the ground nowadays. It is the single most important part of college football recruiting now. Mm-hmm. That being said, you are going to keep any solid program is going to continue to try to recruit its foundation from the high school ranks. You'd mentioned Connor Lindgren. That's kind of the last piece of the puzzle. I think from a high school perspective for Purdue, he's the 320-some-pound nose tackle from College Station, as you mentioned before. He's got Vanderbilt and Arizona State as his other offers. You know, it's really hard to recruit nose tackles. It's hard to make somebody a nose tackle because you have to have a certain, you know, sort of pear shape to you physically, you know, in order to be really effective in that position. And you're kind of born that way. The really good ones are the world is their oyster. Alabama wants you. Auburn wants you. Georgia wants you, LSU wants you, Michigan, Ohio State, USC, everybody. Those guys are really hard to get. But it's like the Lorenzo Neals that you can – that kind of fall under the radar, the Bruce Gastons to a certain extent, that fall under the radar ever so slightly that a Purdue can get, and all of a sudden you have this guy who you can really build a defensive line around at times. But so he's a really important recruit for Purdue, I think more important than I think we've probably even let on. Yeah. For Purdue, because they have to get better at the line of scrimmage. That's still an area long-term where Purdue has got to continue to push forward, continue to get more and more formidable. It's really hard to be dominant at the line of scrimmage at Purdue. History tells us that. But the better you can do, the better chance you're going to have in the Big Ten. Obviously, the transfer portal is going to be – I'm trying to boycott the word portal because I just hear it so much. It drives me crazy. But anyway, you're obviously going to recruit the transfer market.
There you go.
Extensively at the line of scrimmage, but you still want to get those guys you can develop and, you know, have something maybe year two or three, if you can keep them in your program. That's obviously the big if too nowadays. So, you know, I think we've covered a lot of bases here in a very short period of time. So I think,
You know, the portal, that's around the portal. I know Jeff Brian will at any point in time will always take an offensive lineman or defensive lineman. If he thinks that guy can come in and help him, and you know, even wide receiver, if you remember last year, the Brock Thompson commitment was kind of a little bit out of the blue. I don't think anybody thought they really were looking for a wide receiver. Right. But they took the kid for a lot of reasons. And my goodness, you know, what an addition he turned out to be. So, again, just because I think obviously it goes without saying they're always looking at every position. A couple positions are priorities, obviously, but it's something that's always living and breathing and stay on your toes because you never know when someone's going to pop and say they want to be a Boilermaker out of the portal.
Something to keep in mind, too, is this isn't new for Purdue. I mean, even before, you know, transfer deregulation, whatever you want to call it, Purdue was looking for grad transfers every year at offensive tackle. That goes back multiple staffs. Remember, they were looking at junior college guys every year. That's just
– I remember they got that kid from Vanderbilt when Tiller was here, who was a bust, but he was an offensive lineman, I remember.
Elliot Hood, yeah. His father was really sick, and he wanted to come closer to home. Was really sick, wanted to come closer to home. That was really the first grad transfer Purdue took. But once it got to Darryl Hazel, it was every year. You were looking for a grad transfer. Mm-hmm. You're looking for a JUCO. I remember the year vividly. They had to parse every line in the rule book to get David Hedlund into school. They got burned by Manny Machado on signing day. Yeah, that kind of drama, that's the stuff I miss, man. The signing day chaos was so much fun. But that's just the position Purdue's been in every year, even before all of this transfer stuff, you know, got completely transformed. So it's going to be even more so now. But this isn't necessarily a new market for Purdue. So with all that said, I think we've covered a lot of bases here in a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. I want to thank the Purdue Union Club Hotel and the 811 Restaurant for their continued support of this. And I want to make mention of one other thing. I watch a lot of YouTube. I watch a lot of Goodfellas clips. I watch a lot of trail cam videos in various national parks, things like that. I watch people open basketball cards on YouTube. And people always ask for likes and subscribes. So I'm going to go ahead and assume that these things are important. Various algorithms and all sorts of black magic that occurs on the internet, it probably matters to those things. if you enjoy these things, first of all, God bless you. Second of all, if you could be troubled to give us a like, give us a subscribe, whether it's on podcast platforms, on iTunes, whatever it may be, or on YouTube. If you like these things and want to leave us a like and a subscribe, we'd appreciate it. If you don't like them, we're good. So Tom, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. I think we survived this thing. I think we solved all the world's problems, and we will talk to you guys again next week. I will talk to you guys again on Monday after Purdue plays Illinois, and you can't get our voices out of your heads, can you? So thanks, everybody.